Hello, this is Larry Clark from Excelsior Music Publishing with another From the Composers series podcast. And today I'm talking to composer Chris Thompson. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Terrific.
So we're going to talk today, Chris, if you could tell us a little bit briefly about your background in music and how you got started composing.
Okay, sure. Well, we've known each other a long time. So it all goes back to me, even back into my youth. I didn't write music as a kid, but I realized at an early age that I had what I termed to be a radio brain, because so I'm a little older and we didn't have all the technology that we have today, but we had little transistor AM radios. And I realized along the way that, you know, my brain was, or my memory was internalizing music, and I could listen back to the Temptations and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. I could hear the whole tune back in my head. So I knew that, you know, the ability to keep music in there was there at an early age. By the time I got to, you know, college at Westchester, I got challenged by a number of really good teachers. Larry Nelson was a really awesome theory and harmony and composition teacher, and Shirley Munger was a great theory and harmony and also orchestration teacher that challenged us at that time to write music, and so we did. And then I got sucked into drum and bugle corps, and you know all about that part of it. For years in drum and bugle corps and marching bands as well, you know, for the better part of on and off for 20 years, you know, I was writing for anybody and everybody, notably some DCI drum corps like the Crossmen and the Madison Scouts. But for a whole bunch of organizations all over, some in Japan, some in Europe, other senior drum and bugle corps across the across the United States, and you know, tons of marching bands, and a lot of that was as a drum writer, because I got started as a drummer, and I was that even went to grad school as a jazz drummer at Rutgers, and most of the stuff that I was doing for in terms of writing was around drum lines and drumming and percussion ensembles and things like that. And then around, you know, the early 1990s, even before that, back in 88, when we were with Madison, I ended up, you know, doing some brass writing, and realized that I was actually doing that as well as I was doing the other stuff. So I started to experiment, and I had worked with a number of really, you know, a lot of the writers that I worked with, the brass writers, John Jordison, Jerry Kelsey, to name a few, and started to, you know, adopt some of the things and some of the learnings that they had. And then during that time, I went to graduate school at Rutgers, and I got to study with Bill Burrs, Keith Copeland, Kenny Barron, and a tremendous arranger and saxophone player by the name of Mark Kirk. And, you know, Mark Kirk was the guy that looked at me and said, you know, I'm in graduate school and I'm a drum set drummer and I'm grooving. I want to play. I'm going to listen. And he looked at me one day and he played something that I wrote. He just took the score and played it on the piano and said, you know, this is really good. Is all you want to be a drummer? And like, that just sort of changed everything. Because yes, I wanted to be a drummer. I was a drummer, but, I also realized that here's somebody telling me that, yeah, look, you're a good writer, man. And you shouldn't constrain yourself to just the things that you're thinking about. You should, you know, maybe try some other stuff. So the piece that, you know, that we're going to talk about today, that's coming out with Excelsior, Madeline's First Adventure, was actually thank you guys, bless your hearts for putting it out. I mean, I love the piece. Before getting really into that piece, I wrote it back in 92. So what we're putting out is actually sort of the edited version, the re the what do you want to call it, the second edition. Not a whole lot of change of it, but we fixed up some things and made it what it is today. And that's really back in my daughter was 4 years old. Yeah, and she was 4 years old. And so I wanted to write that piece for her, and that's what was the impetus to start composing for at least for band, for concert band, and wind ensemble.
Right.
So.
Right. Now, you talked a lot about you of course did a lot of drum and percussion mm-hmm. writing. Have you written for other things besides concert band and percussion?
Yes. So I love big band. So that's one of the things that I really love to write for. I've written some orchestral stuff. Love strings, love all that stuff. Excuse me, but I'm very fond of big band, and one of the reasons is because I like to play, with big bands. So, you always, as much as I'm writing stuff, I'm arranging stuff. You're in that game too. So as much as you want to do the original stuff, the arranging actually becomes because you got to figure out what to do with somebody's piece. It is compositional in a way, and it's orchestrating stuff, and it keeps you fresh. At least in my world, it keeps me fresh, and I love writing for big band and the things you can do with that. So.
Well, tell us a little bit about your process. Like, how do you get started on a piece? Is it melody first, harmony? What gets you going?
Well, Madeline's First Adventure was a melody I heard in the shower. So, I mean, literally.
I've heard similar things from other composers.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm lathering up, and I hear diddle-dee-da-doo-dee-da, diddle-dee-da-doo-dee-da, and it's I'm like, okay, that's like, yeah. I can work with that. So then, you get out of the shower, you dry off, you run downstairs and you play it on the piano. And I did. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can work with that. I can work with that. Let's take it to here. And so it became the first theme became something that was literally, it was like that. Snap, it's there. And then you start working with that. In other times, it's the piano's my instrument now. I love to play it, and I'm kind of old school with the whole compositional piece. I love the fact that you can put stuff in Finale, but I remember Finale a tool, an orchestration tool. Right. I remember when it was the earlier versions, when it didn't have all the nice synthesized sounds in it and the Garratten right. sounds in it. It didn't, when you played it back, you were playing it back through your synthesizer. And so the best way you could play right. it back was to just hear it back on the piano. Now you hear it like in a band. So I understand how people fall into that. Well, I think I can just do this on the computer, and there's guys that do that. But me, I'm old school. I plunk it out on the piano. I'm a relatively good player. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of what happens compositionally, at least with me, is happening, on that keyboard. What's happening in my head is getting laid out on the keyboard before it hits the paper, or in this case, the computer.
Right. Right. So do you actually write some sketches?
I do.
So you're truly old school.
Yes, I will write down the theme. In fact, when we were just talking about the piece that I'm working on now, or the collection of pieces I'm working on now, I could show you the sketch of it. It's messy. I mean, my notation used to be like really nice because I was a drum guy and had to write a lot of notes, and so you get really good at using a pencil and writing those notes. It's really messy because you write it down fast. But yeah, the A theme and the B theme, and then the chord progression that goes with the B theme is there. Those things. It looks like a very messy lead sheet.
Sure.
And I saw a sketch of what is it? It was a Leonard Bernstein sketch of what's the thing that Santa Clara did there? They did a bunch of his tunes. Anyway, I digress. I saw one of his sketches of, it's messy. But you have to lock some ideas in, and there's remembering everything in your head gets kind of hard. I have found though that being able to play, you know, you start to work with a phrase in the piano. So I'll write down those ideas and lay it out just so that I have a memory tool, and then I'll start to work with that on the piano, and then come up with the different sort of treatments of that stuff, and that usually lays itself out into the piece, and then you get into the piece, and then you start really messing with it because you start seeing what's on the paper and going, oh man, so let's and that's where you know finale is a little bit of a cheat. You still have to have all that, you know, all that harmonic and voicing knowledge in your head, and things to do and not to do, and rules that, you know, if you're going to break, you better break them the right way. But, you know, you start to lay those things out, and then you hear it back on the, hear the computer play it, and you go, yeah, that's pretty cool. So.
Well, also, as we mentioned before we started the recording, finale probably is a good tool for you, because you said you like to write in, you know, with.
Yes. Color. Yes. Well, you know, that if everything was just going to be, you know, on the piano or so I like to write songs too. And I have kind of two tools that I use. One is a very nice Yamaha upright digital piano. That's where I spend most of my time on. And if I'm doing sketches or, you know, when I'm first working stuff out, that's where you'll find me. I also write songs, and I've got a really sweet Yamaha Genotes mini studio arranging, you know, synthesizer, where if I wanted to write, you know, just a tune for somebody, or you know, a pop tune, or a jazz tune, or whatever, it's got, you know, it's got all the drum beats, it's got all the stuff, and I can sound like a band right away. But you can't do that if you're gonna. I mean, even though it has synthesizer sound and string sounds and all that kind of stuff, you can't. It takes too long to do that, to plug all that stuff in there, and you don't have a record of it, like visual records. So finale is really cool for, you know, being able to hear, you know, this voicing of the flutes and the oboe, you know, trying it in different ways to come up with the sound that you want. I'm fortunate enough now that I have a lot of that coloristic stuff already in my head. I know what to put in there, but it wasn't for lack of doing. And I guess that's a message to anybody who wants to write music or wants and is a composer. You're never going to find out unless you just do it. You got to go into this with no fear.
Yeah, some of it is just trial and
error. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. Yeah. I also find that, you and I have talked about this before. I wrote Madeline's First Adventure. And when I wrote that, I was transposing all the parts in my head. I was writing in the transposition. I've since found out that I write quicker, better. I get the stuff down. If I write in concert pitch, and I just remember where all the instruments sit on the keyboard, you know, where their ranges really are. And sometimes, you know, sometimes that really drives, you know, the sound that gets written. There are plenty of instruments that overlay that middle of the keyboard. And that's where it where things can change and it gets different, and where a lot of variation can happen. But, you know, just remembering where they sit, where they project, where their strength is. If you just sort of remember that, then that kind of drives the sound.
And the direction of the piece.
Correct. Yes. Yes.
Excellent. Well, I ask all the folks, all the composers that we've done this with, do you get writer's block? And if you do, You know, how does that sort of manifest itself, and how do you get out of it?
If I'm stuck, there's two kinds of writer's block. One is I have no idea what I'm going to write. I have no like creative junk going into my head to start something. And then there's the writer's block that happens inside of a piece where you're just, man, where am I going with this? I mean,
right.
You're smart. Hopefully you're smart enough to pick a form. And I don't mean to say that pejoratively, but just to, you know, you've picked a form out that you want to try to stay inside of, be creative inside of, so that you force the issue and you deliver something at the end. Music has to have form, unless you're just going to go formless. And then that's a whole other thing too, but that is a form in and of itself. But, you know, if it's inside of a piece, and so I was just sort of dealing with that the other day, there's two things. One, you get up and you go take a walk, or you go work out, or you just get yourself out of it and come back. Two, I was telling my wife this the other day. I said, you know, the odd thing about writing music is that there are parts of what you're writing that you have to be willing to throw in the garbage and just...
And that's hard.
It is hard because it's hard for young writers, especially because they just, you know, you want to get it done, and you want to get things or work as quickly as you can, but you can't force a good thing. So I just did that the other day. I mean, I threw out the third phrase of this thing twice to come up with what I got. And I had to think of how would I treat this differently? And I did. And the way that it came out was, you know, it was far better than what I was trying to do, than what I had tried to do before. So I think that's the one way is you just, you know, you have to take a break. You have to come back to it, and you have to be willing to put things in the garbage. The other thing is, I don't really have a problem not getting things in my head to do. But, you know, everybody else's music, and that's why, you know, I want to listen to everybody's stuff. Other people's music can be inspiration for what you're doing. And there's nothing wrong with that. We inspire each other. You're inspired by the masters. I mean, you need an idea? Go listen to Bernstein or Copeland or any one of these guys that had written, you know, these wonderful masterpieces and say, how, you know, that's... That just the way that they did what they did with that is that's what you need. So I think you inspire yourself with other people's work. And the stuff that I'm working on now, the inspiration is literally this guy's visual artwork. You know, defining the motifs, it's defining the pieces, it's defining how, you know, the treatments that are happening inside of it. One of the pieces will be, you know, the woodwinds and everybody else are going to take a break and just the brass section is going to play. Just because those kind of things can be driven from external sources. And I think there's tons of external sources, nature, relationships, emotions, you know. Mm-hmm.
To get inspiration.
Yeah, the best blues songs are about pain and suffering. So. Unrequited love.
Indeed they are.
You know, so yeah.
So we as composers take inspiration from wherever we can.
Yeah, we do. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sure. So that's another episode of From the Composers. And this is Larry Clark from Excelsior Music. Thank you for listening.